I want to thank Rabbi Yasger for the warm welcome and the kind words, Rabbi Shapiro. It's always good to be back here. I look out, I feel like it's 9:30 a.m. Tuesday morning at the Boca Raton Synagogue. So it's good to see you and it's good to be back here. And before I begin with our topic for our Lunch and Learn today, the Gregorian New Year is the secular New Year, both in Halacha and Hashkafa. I just want to personally invite the Empty Nester group of the Boca Raton Synagogue has arranged a cruise to the Bahamas, February 17th to the 19th. It's a kosher cruise. My wife and I are aspiring empty nesters. We're not yet there, but we will, even though we don't qualify, be on the cruise offering some shiurim classes, minyanim, and it's not just open to BRS members. If anybody wants to attend, there's more details on the BRS website, but I thought I have an audience for whom that is entirely appropriate. So certainly you're all invited February 17th to the 19th, and it's wonderfully priced to the Bahamas. We're going to have a fantastic time. Our topic for today. We are in that last week of the year, a week that many have off from work. Many, in fact, I'm surprised so many of you here at Lunch and Learn. Often this time of year, people are with their grandchildren who are visiting, who have off from school, or with family members whose businesses, companies are shut down. And we're heading towards January 1st, towards the secular New Year. The ball drops, it brings in the New Year, fireworks, other rituals and ceremonies, and we welcome and we're grateful to have lived yet another year, a couple weeks where we still forget on our checks and our correspondence that it's actually a new year. But the new year is upon us. And what I want to spend our time on, we don't have that much time, but I want to spend our time on is, what is the place, what is the role, is there a significance to this secular or Gregorian New Year from a Jewish perspective, from a Torah perspective, from a halachic perspective? So I'll begin by asking a question. Anyone know what the secular date is? What is the Gregorian date today? December 27th. I didn't even know that, but okay, good. December 27th, 2018. Great. Does anyone know what date it is on the Jewish calendar today? So the secular date, over 100 people called out. I asked for the Jewish date, and one or two people knew it. Today is the 19th of Teves, Tavshin Ayin Tes, 5779. One can already sense the challenge, and that even as observant Torah Jews, to a degree we're assimilated, not in our practice or ritual necessarily, but in so much of our thinking, and even in our perspective and attitude towards time, which is a crime, it's a shame, to have forfeited our distinct calendar, and instead adopt a calendar. And the question is, what is the origin of the calendar that we've adopted? So first of all, that you know today is December 27th, what's the origin of the name December? But that you know it's the year 2018, since what? 2018 years. Now, 2018, we use years in our forms and in our checks and our correspondence without even thinking. We don't necessarily have a kavana, we don't have an intent. But 2018 years since what? Since what? So let's take a look together. So that was a rhetorical question for those following at home. Source number one. The Mishnah of Avodah Zarah, the opening Mishnah of the Masechta, tells us the following rule. Preceding a festival, a holiday, an idolatrous or non-Jewish holiday, for 3 days, asur laseis velaseisi mahem, one is forbidden to transact. So if you live among idolaters, you live among non-Jews who are pagans, who are worshipping foreign deities, for 3 days before a holiday on their calendar, we are restricted from transacting, you can't do business. What does that mean? The Mishnah elaborates. Lahash ilan, you can't lend them things. Vilishol mehem, or borrow from them. Lahal vosam, to lend them money. Vililvos mehem, to borrow money from them. Liforan, to repay a debt. Vilifroa mehem, or to accept payment of a debt from them. Why? What's the thinking of the Mishnah? Because if within three days of their idolatrous holiday, you engage in any of these types of transactions, you borrow a lawnmower, lend a lawnmower, you borrow money, you pay money, and so on, what will happen on their holiday when they come before their false deity and they express their gratitude for the wonderful things in their life? Among the things they express gratitude for will be the transaction you just did with them, which makes you an accomplice to idolatry. So therefore, we withdraw from idolaters, idolatrous practice for 3 days before an idolatrous holiday, we keep to ourselves. No transactions, lest we be accomplices, lest we contribute or be partners in their idolatrous practice. Now there happens to be, just parenthetically, a dissenting view in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Nifron Mehem, Mabnesha Meitzer Hulo. You're allowed to take repayment. The fact that the idolater owes you a lot of money and is going to pay you back within 3 days of their holiday, so who wants to make a payment? Nobody enjoys making a payment. So how are you an accomplice or contributing? Says Rabbi Yehuda, you could take a payment. You can close out a debt. Amrullah, the Chachamim disagree. It's a very interesting insight to the human psyche, and I think it's true. The Chachamim say, you're right, when we pay a bill, when we pay a debt, so there's a pain in the short come, because you're parting with the money to pay off that debt or to pay for that bill. But the satisfaction of knowing you're debt-free, the satisfaction, the peace of mind of knowing that you've closed out that debt, that is pleasurable. So you're right. In the immediate moment that the idolater pays you the debt, not necessarily going to be joyous or grateful to their idol. But by the time their holiday comes along and all the things they're thankful for, on the list of things that they're going to thank their idol, their pagan for, is, I'm debt-free. I paid off my debt to that Jewish business person, that Jewish friend. So the question is, does this Mishnah apply today? The Mishnah was written, of course, the Mishnah was written in Israel, and around the birth of Christendom. We're going to reference it a little bit, not in depth. But what was the Mishnah referring to? Who are these pagans or idols that 3 days we can't transact with them? It's a whole separate topic. We could just discuss another time. Is it idolatry? Is Islam idolatry? Is Christianity idolatry? Is Buddhism idolatry? We have definitions of idolatry, and the other religions don't necessarily all meet those criteria or definitions, and there is some debate about it. So, for example, the Rambam holds Islam is not idolatry, but Christianity is. The Meiri holds Christianity is not idolatry in the classic sense today because of a certain technicality. There's a lot more to talk about there. But the Mishnah says you can't transact with idolaters 3 days before their holiday lest you be an accomplice or contribute to their idolatrous practice. Does it apply today? So I draw your attention to the Ramah. This is the Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, Simen Kuf Mem Ches. Source number 2. The Ramar of Moshe Isserles lived 1520 to 1572. He lived in Krakow, Poland. If you've been to Krakow, you've undoubtedly visited his shul, the Ramar Shul, which is still extant, which you can still visit and daven in today. So first the Shulchan Aruch of Yosef Karo writes, Yeshomim she'in kol dvarim elu amurim ela ba'oso zman, aval bezman hazeh inam bekiyem betiv elilu lefichach mutu laseis v'laseis imayim b'yam chagam u'lahavosam v'chol sha'ad dvarim. The Mechaber Rav Yosef Karo writes that there's some who say that all these things we're talking about then, real idols, real idolaters rather, real idols and real idolaters, real paganism. Today, our idolaters are amateur. They're really not impressive. They're like, you know, reform idolaters. They're not really observant of the full legal system, and I didn't mean that in a disparaging way, God forbid, about another denomination, but I mean their flexibility towards the law, the legal system. And therefore says the Mechaber that in our time where they're not bikiyim, b'tivei lilim, they're not experts and they don't have a level of scrupulous, vigilant devotion. So now we're allowed to transact. It's not a problem. That's the Mechaber, Rav Yosef Karo. Rav Yosef Karo lived where? Spain, but he ultimately in Tzfat and died in Israel. Rav Yosef Karo. The Ramar of Moshe Isserles, his later contemporary in Poland, writes his Haggah, writes his comment. And the Ramah writes, Afilu nosnum hamos, lekohanim ein osnum hem tigrovo, so no yelilim el hakohanim ochlem eshosim bo. Even if you give it to their priests, they're not using it in their, they're not beautifying their idolatry or using it in their sacrifices. They're just using it to pay for their lunch and learn. Vod izbeze mishem eva, im nifrosh atzmenu mehem biyom chagam. And what do you think is going to happen, says the Ramah, in Krakow in the 16th century, when we put a sign on our door, the banks are closed, the businesses are closed, the investment opportunities are closed, all the tailor and the shoemaker, so sorry, our non-Jewish neighbors, we can't do business with you because you're a bunch of idolaters. What do you think is going to happen, says the Ramah? You think there will be a burst of friendship and camaraderie and love? You've likely just scheduled the next pogrom. What is going to look like the rest of the year? when we withdraw from business for that week, what's the rest of the year going to look like? So this refers to other things which apply to this time of year for us. That, can you wish a happy holidays? You shouldn't necessarily wish the holiday, which implies subscribing to the theme of the holiday, but can you say happy holidays? Can you respond to a greeting of happy holidays? And so on. And the Ramah here paskins, mishum eva, lest we aggravate and agitate our neighbors and precipitate persecution and oppression, which is part of our history. So the Ramah says, therefore we can treat our modern day co-religionists differently than a group of pagans and idolaters. But even if you go to the holiday party, you don't have to dance around the tree. You don't have to sing the jingle bells. You don't have to. Person should be strict. Even though Eva is giving them certain flexibility, don't be too flexible. He says, also, if you're going to give a gift, don't give it on the holiday, give it the night before. If you're giving a holiday gift on December 25th, what message are you sending about that day? So give it to a holiday gift around that time, not on the day itself. Azoi state the Ramah, that's it for the Ramah. And who does the Ramah quote? Tof Hei. Who is Tof Hei? Simon Kuf Tzadi Hei. Who's Tof Hei? Tof Hei is the Trumas Hadeshen. Trumas Hadeshen is a source for much of the Ramah's psak in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch. Trumas Hadeshen is Rabbi Yisrael Isserlin. He lives in Germany from 1390 to 1460. And he is a basis upon which Ashkenazic practice develops. He's an Ashkenazi authority, and the Ramah bases much of his psak on the opinions of the Trumas Hadeshen. There's only one problem. If you look at the Trumas Hadeshen, our edition of the Trumas Hadeshen, Ramah quotes Trumas Hadeshen Simen Kuf Tzadiye. Look at our Trumas Hadeshen. It's on the left-hand column, source 4. What do you see? We have Sheila Kuf Tzadi Dalet, and what comes right after it? Sheila Kuf Tzadi Vav. What's missing? Kuf Tzadi Hei. Our edition of the Trumas Hadeshen has Simen Kuf Tzadi Hei edited, censored out. Censored out. It's missing. Wow, that gets us curious now, right? What was the good juicy stuff in it that elicited the ire, aroused the suspicion of those editors or publishers who felt a need to censor it, to edit it out? So our edition goes from Kuf Tzadi Dal to Kuf Tzadi Vav. And if you want to know the answer, you simply need to look at an earlier edition of the Ramah, who quotes the Trumas Hadeshen more fully, so we know what was in Kuf Tzadi Hei, but you have to find an edition of the Ramah that itself is uncensored. And I'm grateful to one of my teachers, Rabbi J.J. Schachter, where I first saw this, or he shared this. It's source number 3. This is the Ramah from an edition in Vienna in 1808. So it's a different edition of the Ramah, and it's an uncensored edition of the Ramah, unlike our edition. And what does it say in the uncensored edition of the Ramah? The same thing we read so far, except there's a little bit more. And let's look at the little bit more together. Our Ramah said, if you send them a gift on their holiday, do it the night before, do it around that season, don't do it on that day. That's all our edition said. Here's the real uncensored edition, and it's telling us what the Trumas Hadeshen had in the 15th century. What is their holiday? B'yom ches sha'achar nitol shekorin naya yor. The 8th day after nitol, which we call the Naya Yor. What's Nitl? December 25th, Christmas, is Nitl. What's 8 days later? What's Naya Yor? New Year. January 1st, the New Year. Shiesh lam simen megilam doron. And that's what the Ramah finishes. That's when it's a sign for them if they get a gift on that day. December 25th, Nitl. 8 days later, the Naya Yor. New Year's. Don't give a gift on New Year. Don't give a gift on December 25th. Give it around that season, Mishum Eva, just to be able to have a positive relationship with our neighbors. Don't give it on that day. So here you see a reference in the Ramah to New Year's. Naya Yor. Now you'll wish each other a happy Naya Yor this year. Naya Yor, says the Ramah, based on the Trumas Hadeshen, January 1st. And the Ramah is treating January 1st as a day which is a idolatrous holiday. In other words, it's a day where you shouldn't give the gift on that day itself. Why? What is that day itself? 8 days is significant to us. 8 is not a random number. If December 25th, if you've ever seen a nativity scene, December 25th corresponds with the birth of a particular prominent Jew in history, Jesus, which, by the way, the Gra in his commentary in Shulchan Aruch, lest anyone walk out because I said his name, the Gra in Shulchan Aruch says it's not a problem to say his name. That was his name. That's how he was called to the Torah. That was how he was called to dinner, to do his homework. Yeshua, that was his name, Jesus. His second name we leave out. That's a deity. But his first name we're allowed to use. That's how he was called to the Torah. So December 25th represents the day he was born. When a Jewish boy is born, what happens 8 days later? He has a bris, bagels and lox. He has a bris. So 8 days later, Naya Yor, why is Naya Yor a holiday, a joyous day? It corresponds with the bris of Oso HaIsh, with Jesus' bris. And therefore, there is a religious component to that day, enough of a component that the Ramah, basing himself on the true Masadeshin, says, don't give gifts. Don't participate, relax. Does that still apply to us today? I just ruined all your New Year's parties. Does that apply? I know Century Village is popularly known for their very wild New Year's Eve parties. So I'm so sorry I just spoiled it for you. So does it apply even... Does it apply even in our time? So Rav Moshe has a tshuva about this, source number 5. And Rav Moshe is addressing secular holidays in general. So for example, Thanksgiving. And Rav Moshe writes the following, V'davar la'asos heiz ha'simcha b'yom eid shel ha'nachrim, imim mitzad emunasam, im b'kavana machma sh'yom eid, osam yidina v'im b'lo kavana yesh la'asur mitzad marasayin. To make a holiday, to make a party, to make a simcha on a non-Jewish secular holiday, which is called the holiday, whose origin has a religious component, says Rav Moshe, if you're doing it with intent to participate in their holiday, for sure it's wrong. Even if you're not doing it with intent to participate in their holiday, but you're doing it because it's a convenient day, or to imitate, or simply to participate, you still should refrain, why Marasayan? Because it looks like you're practicing another religion. Of course, if we have our own reason for a simcha, that calendarically falls on the same day. So a bris or a pidyon haben, you're not going to delay the bris or delay the pidyon haben. We have a bris in Mirtz Hashem at BRS on New Year's morning. We didn't say to him, well, let's do it on the 7th day, or we'll do it the 9th day, because you can't do anything on New Year's. It'll look like we're celebrating someone else's bris. We don't say that, says Rav Moshe. You got a bris that falls on that day, a pidyon haben that falls on that day, you keep it on that day. Ein lasor b'shvil marasayin suda mechuyeves, aval suda bar mitzvah, tov lidchos hayom acher. Don't schedule a bar mitzvah. Don't make a wedding or a bar mitzvah, even though it's a convenient day so many people have off from work, says Rav Moshe. Don't do it that day, because it looks like you're participating. There he's talking about generally non-Jewish holidays. I don't know, Easter, where there's no component for us. But he says, Yom Rishon Mishana Shelahem, but New Year's, the Naya Yor, V'chein Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving, that's the Hebrew word, Ein Lesor Medina, of a Baal Nefesh Yeshlam Lahachmir. So there, Rav Moshe says, there's technically nothing wrong. You want to make a bar mitzvah or a wedding on New Year's or on Thanksgiving, everyone's off from work. Those have essentially morphed into secular holidays. Stop the average non-Jew, devout, Catholic, Christian, Protestant in the street and say, what does New Year's represent? They'll tell you, the New Year. The ball dropping, a party, the New Year. It represents staying up late. That's what it represents. So Rav Moshe says, therefore, on those days, it is permissible. So you see that there is halachic literature about the Naya Yor, about the Gregorian New Year. And it is relevant to us with consequences. Rav Moshe says, today, it's so secular, it's okay to participate, but we should be aware of the Ramah, the Trumas Adeshin, the early observance, did correspond with the 8th day after someone was born. Which leads to a broader question, which is what I want to address next. And that is, can we use the secular date at all? Or implicitly in the use of the secular date, is there an acknowledgement or a belief or a validation that somehow our calendar should operate around the axis of the, not founder, historically he's not the founder, but the deity or the object or source of worship of another religion which is foreign to ours. So when you say today's December 27th, so December 27th is not inherently any relationship to anything else. But when you conclude 2018, since what? And can we use that date Can we use that date when we fill out forms, when we fill out our calendar, when we correspond with one another? Whatever the flyer or the email that announces Lunch and Learn today, did it say December 27th, 2018? Or did it say Yud Tes Teves Tav Shin Ayin Tes? And if it said Yud Tes Teves Tav Shin Ayin Tes, would anyone know when to go, where to go, why to go, how to go? Which is a significant problem. Stop the average Jewish child after 12 years of Jewish education, a bar or bat mitzvah. Today it's compounded close to $1 million to give them that Jewish education and say, when is your Jewish birthday? When is your Jewish birthday? A month ago I went to Israel for my nephew's bar mitzvah, and I had a couple of my kids with me. And this is such an only in Israel story. But at the customs, when we landed, there's an Israeli, no kippah, no yarmulke, and he looks at my daughter's passport, and her birthday was the next day. Her secular Gregorian birthday was the next day. I'm not going to tell you which daughter, and you don't know their birthday, so you won't figure it out. So her birthday is the next day. So this Israeli with no kippah says to her, oh, happy birthday. Your birthday is tomorrow. When is your Hebrew birthday? Oh. So I'm embarrassed to tell you that this daughter happened to have forgotten. She didn't remember. She didn't know. Right. This is only in Israel. There is a line behind us developing out the door, but he doesn't care. Without his kippah, for the next 10 minutes, he gives her and me a musar schmooze about how could we not know, how could she not know her Hebrew birthday? What kind of Jew doesn't know their Hebrew birthday? I'm glad it wasn't the LL security person, or we never would have gotten on the plane if that was the security question to get through security. So it's a shanda. It really is a shanda. It's a shame. It's a shame and it's embarrassing. How many don't know their own Hebrew birthday? We should know our own Hebrew birthday. We know the secular year. So are we allowed to know the secular year? 2018. So skip for a moment to the very back of your booklet. I want to give you a piece of history, and then we'll go back and look at the tshuvas in this question, and then I want to tell you a little hashkafa, and then I'll let you go back to seconds and lunch, and I'm going to go back to work. So, the Gemara in Sota, it's source 10, it's the back of the booklet. It's the Gemara in Sota, Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. The art scroll edition, which is on the bottom, continues the censored edition. The edition on top is also censored, but at least it contains the asterisk, which sends you to the bottom, that I conveniently circled for you, which tells you the rest of the story of who the Gemara is really talking about. What's happening here in the Gemara? For the sake of time, I'll tell you the story outside. Sota Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. It's also in Sanhedrin Kuf Zayin Amud Beis. And there's an incident that occurred after King Yanai killed the rabbis, after Yanai, who was the king, killed the Chachamim of his time. Right, we can start the Gemara. Rabbi Shua ben Prachya Mahi, what is the story? Kedavakato Yanai Malkal Rabbanu, when Yanai killed the rabbis, Shimon Metshetach at Minu Achasei, Shimon Metshetach was sitting by his sister. You know, in Yerushalayim, Shimon Metshetach Street, and what's her name? Hamalka Street. These are all these personalities. Rabbi Shua ben Prachya Azal Arak L'Achsandria Shal Mitzrayim. Rabbi Shua ben Prachya fled, he ran to Alexandria. Kavishlam HaShalach L'Shimon Metshetach, when there was peace in Eretz Israel, he was able to come back. He sent a letter to a student, Rabbi Shua ben Prachya, Mini Yerushalayim Mirakodesh Lech L'Achsandria Shal Mitzrayim, from me in Yerushalayim to you, Alexandria, in Egypt. He was telling him, it's safe, it's time to be able to come back. On their way back, they stayed in an inn. And they had wonderful treatment, their hostess. And Rabbi Shua ben Prachya says, wow, this woman is so kind. Avdala yikara tuva, so much, she showed us so much honor. Kamana achsanya. How wonderful is this hostess? Samalo echad mitalmidav, one of his students said, Rebbe, eineha trutos. What do you mean she's so beautiful? Her eyes were half closed. Her eyes are half closed. They're not bright, they're not wide open, they're not shining. She looks disfigured, whatever. Her eyes are closed, they're half closed, she's not beautiful at all. Rishu ben Prachya became angry at the student for focusing on the woman's beauty, on her vanity, and placed the student in Cherem. Who is this student? Look upstairs, look at the top Gemara where you have the asterisk. Who is it? Yeshu HaNotri. The student is Jesus. Yeshu HaNotri. It's Yeshu. We took his name out. His name was censored out for our own safety and protection. But the Talmud is recalling a story between Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya and his student Jesus. And after he tried to achieve forgiveness from his Rebbe, he tried one more time. But Rabbi Yeshua ben Prachya was ready to allow, to forgive, to annul the Cherem. But he was in the middle of davening. He was in the middle of saying Shema when Jesus came to him. So he waved at him. Like he probably gave him one of these, you know. I'm in the middle of Shema. Give me a minute. But Jesus misinterpreted the hand signal and understood it to mean that he was rejecting his plea to be forgiven from Cherem. So the Gemara tells us that he misunderstood and he never attempted to receive forgiveness again, and whatever implications it has. So what does it tell us about when Jesus lived? That's my point. The censorship of the Talmud is a great topic for a great scholar, not for me. An important topic. I'd love to learn more about it. Why was his name? When was his name? How was his name censored out? Does it? Should it appear in our modern editions? But his name was censored out. But what does it tell us about when Jesus lived, if he's a student and a contemporary of Rav Yeshua ben Prachya? So if we try to understand it, and we put it into context, we know the following. Hillel was a student of Rav Yeshua ben Prachya, and Hillel was the Nasi 100 years before the destruction of Bais Sheni of the second Beis HaMikdash. When did that happen? In what year? Around the year 70, 69 C, 70 C. We know what happened around the year 70. So according to Gemara, when did Jesus live, or when did he die? If he died 70 CE, so he dies many years before the beginning of the secular calendar, right? So how do we reconcile that? 2018, but he dies in 70. How do we reconcile when he lived, when he died, and so on, with the secular calendar? So there's many approaches to this, and we're not going to develop them now. The Ravid in the Sefer HaKabbalah says, resolves the contradiction, and he says the Gemara is accurate, and the historical account and the historical timeline, our calendar is inaccurate. The Abarbanel says that Christians have distorted the calendar, the dates, because they want to associate the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash as if it happened soon after Jesus' death. Because it's in Christian interest or agenda to say, why did God destroy our Beis HaMikdash? As punishment for the death, or at least in their interpretation, or historically their interpretation, the killing of Jesus. There are others who have a different theory. I once spoke to Lawrence Schiffman, Professor Schiffman, when he was at BRS. He's an expert on the Dead Sea Scrolls. I spoke to him. He was able to provide a lot of the scholarship about exactly the dating. And he referenced this theory and rejected it. There's a theory of the second Jesus theory, that there are two Jesuses. There were two people named Jesus. They were both killed. That our Gemara is referring to a different Jesus. Rav Yaakov Emden himself subscribes to that theory, that there were two Jesuses, so therefore the conflict between the dating based on our Gemara and the historical account is not a contradiction. It's talking about two separate people all together. So historically, is it the same? Is it different? Who's right? Who's wrong? Unclear. But what is clear is that when that date is used today by many, if you stop the average, even mostly ignorant person, and you say 2018 years since what? Most people, whether they're accurate or inaccurate, historical or ahistorical, but most will say 2018 years since Jesus. So the question is, can we as religious Jews, as Torah Jews, as devout Jews, can and should we be using that date? So the one who has the strongest feelings on this is the Maram Shik, source number 6. The Maram Shik in his Tshuva, Kufay and Aleph. Maram Shik lived in Germany 1807 to 1879. And the Maram Shik was asked about a tombstone. A matzeva is being put up. I didn't even mention that, but it's relevant for us as well. What dates do you put on the matzeva? Do you put, if you want the children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren to know what era, what decade, what millennia this person lived in, you better put the secular dates, because we've already talked about how many of our youth even know what Hebrew year it is. So can you put the secular date on a matzeva, on a tombstone? That was the Shaila, that was the question that was asked of the Maram Shik in his Tshuvas here in Yoredeya. Hamatzeva ahi nechteves b'loshon ha'akum, v'gam prad ha'shanu ba'ofen kamo sh'umas ha'akum monim l'notri, v'shal ma'alasim r'shon laniach ha'matzeva hu o'sham olutcha betit, must the person cover it over with cement, ma'shikosebo hazman l'notri, do you have to cover over what the secular date is, u'lahashlechas ha'matzeva ha'chutza, or maybe one's obligated to take down the matzeva altogether. Is one allowed to write? Is one allowed to preserve the secular date on a matzeva? And Maram Shik answers as follows. Look at the other line, the left-hand column. Masha asu ot shekosfa misper hashanu kederach chadashim gam ken b'loshan la ze aveira kfula u mechupelas. The misper hachadashim shalam eina mechuvanu le misper b'nei Yisrael. Masha saima b'misper hashanu le misper hanotzri ledaiti ze iser deoraisa. Maram Shik is very strong. He says, first of all, we have a mitzvah to count months. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chadashim. We have a mitzvah to count months. And January is not the first month. So we have a mitzvah to count months. January is not the first. We're focusing on the year. You should know there's tshuvas that talk about, can you write? 12, 27, 18. When you say 12, you're saying this is the 12th month, and it's not. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, which is the first month? Nisan is the first month. So when you use a number to try to identify another month as that number, are you violating that mitzvah of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem? So the Maharam Sheikh says, yeah, that's not our month, that's not our number. So by the way, there are those who are strict when they write a check or a form or a document, they don't write 12, they write December. They never use a number, they always write the name of the month as a stringency to not violate this mitzvah of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem that we count months according to our calendar. But the Maharam Sheikh goes further and says that the year, 2018, if you say that year, it's an Isser Doraisa. Why? Hare HaTorah, Parshat Mishpatim, Nehmer, B'Sham Elohim Achirim, Lo Tizkeru. Should be Elohim, Achirim, Lo Tizkeru. V'amru Chachamim, V'chein Kasu HaPoskim, Da'asur Lo Amal HaVero, Hamtein Li B'tzar Avodah Zarah Ploni. The Maharam Sheikh says, we have a prohibition of idolatry. You're not allowed to worship a deity, a god, other than the Ribbono Shel Olam, other than our Hashem. Not only do we have a prohibition to worship another god, but we also have a prohibition, says the Maharam Sheikh, to do any action which would cause others to think about that Avodah Zarah. So we don't meet at the corner where the church is. You don't make a left where the church is. We don't make references, and we don't identify, and we don't tell a friend to meet me near a particular Avodah Zarah. We don't reference the Avodah Zarah by name. We don't do anything which would lend credibility or credence or invoke the worship of someone else towards that Avodah Zarah. So the Maharam Sheikh goes so far as to say, every time you say it's 2018, you're violating that prohibition. Because you are inciting those around you to think, 2018, 2018 since when? Oh, Jesus. So therefore the Maharam Sheikh says, the most extreme position on this, that there is an Isser De'oraisa, a biblical prohibition to use the secular year. Chassam Sofer, his student, source 7, it's quoted in the Kolbo. This is not the original Kolbo, but this is a subsequent Kolbo on Avelis, unclear when it was written, the 14th to 15th century. But he quotes the Chassam Sofer from his drushes, who says it's also De'oraisa for a different reason. Chassam Sofer argues, and so on. He says, by counting years to the creation of the world, 5779, we are associating, we're connecting, we're linking with the creator of the world. By saying it's the year 5779, when you say Tafshin Ayin Tes, if I say Tafshin Ayin Tes since what? What should everybody respond? Since Bereishis, since the creation of the world. Oh, who created the world? Hashem. So the exact opposite. We use our year in order to promote and reinforce and strengthen our relationship with the authentic, with the real and true Hashem. So if you forfeit that, if you deviate from that, and you're using some other year, you're not acknowledging Hashem as the creator of the universe. To substitute the year that acknowledges Hashem as the creator of the universe by using some other year, says the Chassam Sofer, that's forbidden. It is, in fact, an Isser De'oraisa. Those are the strongest opinions of Maharam Sheikh and the Chassam Sofer. Rav Moshe Sternbach, source number 8, Tshuvas Van Hagas, was asked this question. He says, I have no problem. I don't see any problem whatsoever using a secular date. And he says, we find in Talmudic times that they wrote their documents, their contracts, using the Greek dates. I told you, you can't use the number of the month because we have different numbers of months. V'lo yivanti dvar of klal. But I'm not worried about it at all, says Rav Sternbach. So that Rav Sternbach says, yeah, we have the lunar calendar. So when we have the lunar calendar, the first month is Nisan. But those who count according to the sun, use whatever number you want. So when you say 12 of December, you're talking about according to the sun. We count according to the moon. Therefore, it's not a problem whatsoever. Al-Kain on the left-hand side, Mutla Tzayim, Mechtav, Lekosev, Chekim, Mushtaris, Latash, Miskoros, Tzchiris, Chodesh, Kvichot, Shehem, V'chein Tzipar, Limar, and Hagon, Rav Yitzchak, Zelvel, Soloveitchik. He quotes his Rebbe, the Griz, Rav Velvel, the Brisker Rav, the Rav's uncle, Shavav, Hagon, Rav Chaim, the Rav's grandfather, Rav Chaim, used to pay a salary according to the months of the secular, but lo chashash klal, he wasn't worried at all. So Rav Moshe Sternbach is a pretty religious personality, and he's not worried whatsoever. The Shivas Van Hagos, we can use their month, we can use their year, it's not a problem whatsoever. He's in good company. Rav Avadya also, the Tzitz Eliezer, Shlomo Zalman Orbach, the Az Nidbaru, plenty of Tshuva, source 9, the bottom of page 3, also deals with this question. He says, first of all, what's to say, their calendar, it's unclear their calendar actually corresponds, right? And here Rav Avadya goes through this question of how to reconcile the contradiction between the Talmudic calculation of when Jesus lived with the historical account. And Rav Avadya himself subscribes to the idea that there were two men named Jesus and they were both killed. And Rav Shua ben Prachya's student is talking about a different Jesus than the Jesus who became the deity of Christendom. So first of all, says Rav Avadya, who's to say that 2018 is an accurate number? You're not really referencing anything. Whoever thinks that is mistaken and is inaccurate. Number two, says Rav Avadya, number two, atheists all over say it's 2018. So if atheists, who probably are as opposed to referencing that religion as we are, and atheists have no problem using it, because essentially we've universally chosen to use that number to all be on the same page about what year we're talking about. There's no religious intent in using the number. Therefore, says Rav Avadya, it's not a problem at all. Not a problem at all. And he says, V'chein, on page 4, Dalad, V'chein, B'kodesh Chazisei L'Rabbeinu Ashach, David Uvda Benafshe Biger Shikoso the philosoph Echad. Rav Shach Sai Kohen Rappaport, says Rav Avadya. We have a letter he wrote to a philosopher. Nipasa Besefer Kiryu Ne'amana Shusim B'sham B'tarach HaLoazi. How does the Shach sign his letter to a philosopher? Gimel Februar 1660. And we also have other tshuvas. Rav Shlomo Le'eger. And we have, as well, the Chassam Sofer. And here Rav Avadya brings, really, I think, a very compelling piece of evidence. The same Chassam Sofer who, in his drushes, railed against forfeiting the year according to creation and bonding with the Creator, that same Chassam Sofer, in a letter he sent to the government, ends by saying it's the 8th of November, 1821. True, the Chassam Sofer wrote that. However, here for a secular document, he had no problem using the secular date. He was talking about in our religious documents, we the Jewish community should preserve the Jewish date, but if you have to fill out a secular document. And therefore, Rav Avadya concludes, "Aval iser mamash lo shemana v'lachin ein tzarech limchaz ba'anogim kein mitoch shigur ba'alma." But ubeprat b'chutz lartz, shekol misradei ha-memshala be'ilei ha-mischar v'atisiyam monim le-misparam. He says, certainly outside of Israel, in Israel, where every storekeeper should know the Jewish date, every customs agent knows the Jewish date, but in America, outside of Israel, in the diaspora, where they only operate by the secular date, says Rav Avadya, it is not a problem. And he says, I saw it with my own eyes. It's how he ends the tshuva on page 5. I've seen many batei din in Chutz La'aretz who on their correspondence have the Hebrew date, but they also have the English date, and it is not halachically a problem whatsoever. So Rav Avadya is lenient. We saw that Rav Moshe Sternbach and his Tshuvas Van Hagos is lenient and has a response to this prohibition. There's other poskim as well that I referenced who are lenient. Rav Chaim Kanievsky believes one should try to refrain from a secular date. If you're giving a check to somebody, again, in America, I don't know if the check will clear if you write Yud Tes Tevis. Rav Chaim was talking about in Israel, better to use the Hebrew date. In Chutz La'aretz, you can be lenient. Rav Moshe was lenient, but Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Yaakov was more strict and tried to avoid using the English date. And there are other poskim as well who weigh in on this question. Okay, so far we've seen, and I just want to make one more point, I know we're running out of time, but so far we've seen that the Naya Yor, New Year, is not just a absolutely secular day. It's the eighth day after December 25th. Its origin correlates with a religion which is not our own. The Mishnah says 3 days don't transact with them. The Ramah, in the uncensored edition, includes December 25th and the Naya Yor, New Year, as days. Don't give gifts on the day itself. Give around those days. Mishum Eva, don't give on the day itself. Rav Moshe says, today, New Year's, Today, New Year's is a gurnish. Nobody observes New Year's as a religious holiday. So if you want to schedule a wedding or a bar mitzvah, New Year's or Thanksgiving, says Rav Moshe, it is not a problem. What about the dates? There's a conflict between the Talmudic account and the historical account. There are several suggestions of how to resolve that conflict. But can we use the secular date? Some poskim are strict not to use the number for the month because we have our own numbers, Chodesh, Rishon, and so on. And others have, where do the names of the months, where does Teves come from? Where do these names of the months themselves come from? They come from Babylonia. When we left Babylonia, we took their names to remember the redemption, to remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out from there. So some say don't use those names, only don't use the number, only sign the name. Some say don't use the year, but we saw there are many, many poskim who are lenient, who allow us to use the date, and I think it's very clear that in our day and age, the majority of the world universally are using that date with no religious intent. We're simply using it as sort of a social contract that we all know we're talking about at the same time. But I want to add one more word in closing in Hashkafa, because in the secular world, if there's no religious theme to New Year's, there's another theme to New Year's. What's the other word that goes with New Year's? New Year's?
Day.
Resolutions. New Year's resolutions. Now, our New Year's resolutions come a few months earlier. They come in the month of Elul, they come in the month of Tishrei. They come in the Aseret Yemei Tshuva. We have a different period of the year where we are reflecting. It's always fascinating, and I won't now, but contrast our notion of New Year's versus the secular notion. Our notion of New Year's is to sit in reflection, contemplation, to be accountable for mistakes we've made, to pledge how we're going to have a better year ahead. A secular notion of New Year's is party as hard as you can so you can't even remember what happened that night, let alone any regrets or remorse or reflections or pledges you made for the year ahead. There's a lot to be said about the different connotations. You know, this Friday, that's tomorrow. December 28th is actually a day some observe on the calendar. There's a day which there's a group tried to institute. It's gaining some steam. It's called Good Riddance Day. Google it. You'll find that there's a whole movement. Good Riddance Day is you go through things from this year, and whether it's objects, things, I don't know, maybe even people, anyone holding you back, anything negative in your life, anything taking away your happiness or pleasure, tomorrow you say good riddance. There's a gathering in Times Square, December 28th. It's good riddance. It's not a suggestion for anyone here. It's good riddance. It is Good Riddance Day. Again, we have the opposite. Good Riddance Day is not, I can't wish away things I wish were different, but we have a very different view. So New Year's is correlated highly with the idea of a New Year's resolution. People resolve to change. If you don't believe me, you can look at Google. Google keeps statistics and data. And I'll tell you from last year, 2017, Google provided the most searched New Year's resolutions. You ready? You want to know what they were? Okay, very briefly, here they are. 62 million searches for get healthy. 33 million searches for get organized. 19 million searches for live life to the fullest. 17 million searches for learn new hobbies. 16 million searches for spend less or save more. 6 million to travel. 4 million for reading more. In total, 159,031,920 used Google to search for help for their New Year's resolution. And that number has been going up every year, year over year from the years before. Now, who is the biggest beneficiary of those Google searches and of the resolutions people are making? Well, certainly it's Google who are selling ads and so on and so forth. But who are the biggest beneficiaries of New Year's resolutions in general? We all know. It's not the 160 million people who do the searches, most of whom don't stick with their resolution, but it's fitness retailers and gyms. The biggest spike in membership comes the first week in January. Everybody decides, this is my year. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to exercise. I'm going to work out. This is my year. But the statistics show that by February, almost 80% of the new members have stopped coming. So I'll tell you an amazing statistic, an astounding statistic. 45% of Americans make New Year's resolutions, but only 8% are successful at keeping them and meeting their goals. 92% of the people who pledge to make a change fall flat on their face. Flop. 92% fail. 92% fail. And I want to leave you with this thought. Why the 92% fail? And though it's not our custom or our practice, it's not our new year, but the Naya Yar comes with New Year's resolutions. So I want to leave this thought, how if we are making a resolution, if we are offering a wish, if we are making a pledge to change, how we can measure ourselves by next year this time, next Yud Tes Teves, that we can measure ourselves, that we are measure ourselves literally having made a change, and figuratively, that we are among the 8% who are successful. Why do most people fail? Why do most people fail? So I want to share with you an insight from the Piazetzner Rebbe. In our Tuesday night course at BRS on the world that was, last week or 2 weeks ago, I forget already, but I gave a talk on the Piazetzner Rebbe, Rav Kalanimus Kalman Shapira of Piazetzna. He gave drushes in the Warsaw Ghetto, the Ish Kodesh. He was an incredible, incredible personality. So we went through his biography, his history, and then we learned a section from each one of his svarim. I feel very close to his teachings and his philosophy. I find him incredibly, incredibly inspirational. You can listen to that talk online if you want. So the Piazetzner Rebbe of Kalanimus Kalman Shapira, Hashem Yikom Damo, he was killed by the Nazis. Tragic, tragic life. Lost his one son, his daughter-in-law, bombings over Warsaw. He himself had opportunities to escape. He had several opportunities to be saved, but he refused to leave his chassidim. And he was deported after the ghetto uprising failed. He was in Tronniki labor camp, and he was shot and murdered, and he was murdered there. I'll tell you something amazing. I gave this talk, and it was put up on YU Torah, and someone I don't know, not from our community, sent me an email, said they listened to the talk, and they had to share with me this story. They became connected to the teachings of the Piazetzner Rebbe, Rav Moshe Weinberger, of Eish Kodesh in Woodmere, named his shul for the Piazetzner Rebbe, and deserves great credit for really reviving the teachings and spreading the teachings of the Piazetzner Rebbe. So this is an individual who became exposed to Rav Moshe Weinberger, attached himself to the Piazetzner Rebbe's teachings, and hung a picture of the Piazetzner Rebbe in his home. And his father, who was a survivor, and he, in his email tells me his father's story, which is astounding, came to visit him and looked at that picture and turned white. And he asked his father, "What's the problem?" And he said, "That's him." He said, "That's who?" He said, "That's the man who I could have saved. I offered him a visa to get him out, and he refused it." So this man said to his father, "Why didn't you ever tell that story?" And his father said, "It's not my story to tell. It was the Rebbe's story. Only he could tell it." And he, therefore, wouldn't tell me his father's name, didn't want me to ever say it in his father's name, but it was kind of testimony from his father when he saw that picture that it was true the Piazetzner Rebbe could have gotten out and didn't. It's an incredible story. He was an incredible man. And I encourage you to learn his svarim and about his life. So one of the great, great works that he left us is a book called Tzav Vezirus. Tzav Vezirus is the Piazetzner Rebbe's spiritual diary. What do I mean by a spiritual diary as opposed to a regular diary? I know I'm going over time, so maybe I won't get invited next year. That's fine. So it's not fine, but I'm saying I apologize for going overtime. I apologize. I'm finishing up. So what's a spiritual diary as opposed to a regular diary? A regular diary says, this is what I had at the lunch and learned today to eat, and I got in a fight with my girlfriend, and my parents don't, whatever, a little kid diary. And I had this thing at school, and then that happened, and I skimmed my knee. What's a spiritual diary? My spiritual aspirations, my dreams, my disappointments, the thoughts that have helped transform me. So listen to this entry that he has. This is actually his Tzav Vezirus has actually been translated into English. I forgot what it's called. But Tzav Vezirus. He writes the following. If you want to know if you've progressed on your spiritual path over the years, the way to judge is to look at your resolution, at your inner drive, and not at your wishes. Only the inner drive with which you work to attain your desired goal is called resolution. If you don't work, but you rather just want, it's not called a resolution. It's just some wish that you wish for yourself to be blessed with that desired objective. For example, the poor person who works to sustain himself, this is drive, because he's doing something constructive. But the wish that he'll find $1 million is just a wish to be rich. It's not a resolution. Every Jew would like to be like a tzaddik. But this is no more than a wish. You want to wake up in the morning and suddenly be a tzaddik. Only the level of state of being that you seriously work towards can truly be called a resolution. And I think here the Rebbe has given us the secret to real change. Is to be honest with ourselves and not to offer wishes. To say, I want to be 20 pounds lighter, I want to exercise 3 times a week, I want to be more patient, I want to be rich, I want this or I want that. Those are wishes. We really just want to wake up the next day and be like that. But you know what? A wish, wishes don't come true. The wish doesn't just come true because you wished it. If you really want to make that change, if you want to be among the 8% and not the 92%, then you have to make real resolutions. They should be called New Year's wishes because that's what they are for 92% of people. There's New Year's wishes. This is what I wish. But it's not realistic. One shouldn't have the expectation it'll come true. If we want to be among the 8%, we have to have real resolutions. And a real resolution is waking up and having a plan. Here's my plan. And here's what has knocked me off course in the past. And here's why I'm going to succeed this time. I have a plan, and I have people and things that will hold me accountable, and I've invested in it, and I've got a plan. If we want to make a resolution which will be lasting and transformative, we have to have a plan. Pasuk says in Tehillim, "Me oivai sechak meni." From my enemies I became wise. Rav Yankel Galinsky says, "Me oivai" means I need to gain wisdom and strategy. How? Me oivai. From studying my Yetzer Hara, sechak meni. I can become smart. Only when I identify the obstacles and hazards can I plan to avoid them. Only then can I circumvent them. Only then can I pursue my goals with resolutions. Write them down, share them with others, put systems in place, measure my success. Only then will I really make my wishes into resolutions, will I really make them all come true. So on that note, I wish all of you a good Erev Shabbos, I guess a good Nayayar, with success in the pursuit of all of our resolutions, not wishes. Have a wonderful day and a good Shabbos. And sign up for our Empty Nest Cruise.